again, everyone, and welcome to it. It's the last Daily Caller podcast for the week. It's the 18th day of October 2019. I'm Derek Hunter. I am your host. Welcome to the program. Thank you for downloading, sharing, spreading the word, telling a friend, rating and reviewing on iTunes. All that good stuff and all the emails you send me and all the nice, cool things you send me and offer to send me. You guys absolutely rock. So much to get to, all sort of related to one thing, the witch hunt for Donald Trump. They want a scalp. They want the scalp, the left does, whether they are elected Democrats or credentialed media. They are all in the tank for one purpose and one purpose only, to destroy the president of the United States. Their problem is he hasn't done anything to deserve it. We have the exchange that the left, again, every time they think, oh, well, this is it. We got him. We got him. Mick Mulvaney, the chief of staff, the acting chief of staff to the president, gave a press conference yesterday. And boy, howdy, you would have thought he went up there and confessed to murder. He didn't. He didn't even confess to what the media portrayed him as confessing. I'm sitting around watching TV earlier in the day, and I'm flipping around, and the president was speaking, doing a press conference. So I think he was just speaking. I don't think he was doing a press conference. I can't remember. I've never seen a president so available to the media. And I look up, and I flip over to CNN. I wanted to see if they were, it was the vice president who was speaking in Turkey with the secretary of state about the ceasefire that they negotiated. So I wanted to see if, is CNN covering this? Is MSNBC covering this? So I flip around to both just to see. And they were, to their credit, they were taking it. They spun it afterwards in a way that distorted it. But in the bottom right-hand corner of CNN, it says, breaking news, White House admits to quid pro quo with Ukraine. And I thought, what is that all about? And, well, I found out what that was all about. And you'll find out what that is all about and how it is garbage and how the media is absolutely embarrassing themselves, but they no longer have any shame. It doesn't matter. So if you are the person who at every party gets drunk and strips off naked and starts screaming and hooting and hollering, by about the fifth time you do that, all the friends you still have, which probably won't be very many, are just going, well, that's what he does. That's what Earl does. What are you going to do? That's kind of what the media has become. That's what Earl does. This is what they do. This is who they are. So we have that. We also have an excellent interview, if I do say so myself, with Fox News legal analyst. What is his official title? I want to get it right here. Flip to the back of his book. He is the legal and political analyst at Fox News. Greg Jarrett. About his new book, Witch Hunt, The Story of the Greatest Mass Delusion in American Political History, which, boy, is that as relevant today as it ever has been. And you will find out at the end of that interview how to procure yourself a signed copy of that book. I have three signed copies of that book. I will be giving away two of them next week. So you find out, you know how to do it if you've listened to the show. If you're new to the show, welcome. Listen to the end and you'll find out how to win a signed copy of said book and how to get entered twice if you've already purchased a copy of the book. And there are a lot of you who have. And by the way, Greg Jarrett has incredible handwriting and a really cool looking signature. A lot of people, I collect signed books. I have like 1,500 of them at this point. A lot of people, it's just chicken scratch. Those of you who have asked me for a signed book plate, and if you want a signed book plate, if you bought my book, you can email me, derek@dailycaller.com. I'll happily mail you one. You can stick it right in your book. My handwriting is chicken scratch. It's terrible. It looks like a schizophrenic made a Rorschach test. It's horrible. Greg Jarrett, he must have gone to like Catholic school or something, because his handwriting is perfect and his signature is very, very cool. Very, very cool. So stick around for all of that. And then at the end of the program, I'll recap all the rules and everything like that. But first, I got to talk about our wonderful sponsor. I want to tell you about Life Change Tea. It is a game changer. Since I've been drinking Life Change Tea, I've noticed I feel so much better. And I can't tell you how much more energy I have. Well, I could, but it would take a full hour. How does it work? Life Change Tea is a proprietary herbal formula. It's a gentle daily cleanse designed to rid your body of harmful intruders. They playfully say it's the tea that makes you go. And it is. Let's face it. Our food was different 60 years ago. Minimally processed, free of pesticides, nourishing and healthy for your body. Today, not so much. GMOs, pesticides, herbicides, and heavy, heavy processing. That's the worst. They've depleted nutrition from our food. It's no wonder you feel so run down. You need to clean yourself out and start over so your body can absorb the nutrients that remain in our food. Try it for yourself. Don't take my word for it. Go to GetTheTea.com now. That's GetTheTea.com. Get ready for more energy. I drink it every day. I have a fresh gallon up in the refrigerator right now. Use as directed. It ain't no chugging tea. Follow the instructions. It works. It works really well. Life Change Tea is not available in stores. Go to GetTheTea.com. That's GetTheTea.com. And if you enter my name, Derek, D-E-R-E-K, at checkout, you get free shipping. You can't beat that deal. All right, let's get down to it, shall we? So Mick Mulvaney comes out and he's announcing at the White House the location for the next G7 summit, which is set for next June. A fairly routine announcement that is, well, it's not routine because this is the Trump administration and the media has their sights set on anybody that they want scalps. They want to collect scalps. They're like the Indians ready. The French are paying big money for scalps and they want to go out there and get these scalps. Well, Mick Mulvaney comes out and announces that the next G7 summit in June of next year is going to be at Doral down in Florida. Donald Trump owns the club. It is a gigantic compound somewhere in the neighborhood of 900 acres, which is huge. It caused a lot of controversy. Democrats immediately started screaming, emoluments clause, emoluments clause. And I will concede that the optics of it do not look very good, except for the fact that you will likely see Doral lose money on this. Now, if they, you know, end up jacking up the rates and everything, believe me, we'll find out about that, and that would be an outrage. But if the location fits the needs, meaning the ability to be secured, having a wide perimeter where you can see people approaching, anybody trying to sneak up there, and defendable borders, then it makes perfect sense. And frankly, I want the president to be somewhere where he feels comfortable when dealing with other world leaders. That we've never had a president who was a successful businessman and had made a fortune in real estate before is a testament to just how narrow the pool we've been fishing in for our presidents is. It doesn't immediately mean corruption, although you would never know that again from the way that the media is portraying it. Donald Trump is making himself rich off of this. Donald Trump's net worth had to have decreased by about $3 billion since he's been president, if not more. He has 40% of the country that would love to burn down all of his properties. They're trying to destroy his family and his children, and they will boycott not only. Remember when Eric Swalwell was up in New York when he was running for president for that 20 minutes, and he tweeted out a photograph of himself outside of Trump Tower, and he said, there was a Starbucks in there, but I wasn't about to go into Trump Tower. I walked a block and went to another Starbucks, and people mocked him because he's an idiot, because Starbucks is just renting space. It's not owned by Trump, but he felt very, very morally superior, which is the only way he feels is morally superior. He's never actually intelligent or superior intelligence. And he was mocked roundly for it. He's got a bunch of people in this country and on this planet, thanks to the left being in having infected the entire world, who will never ever, not only while he's president, but never ever for the rest of their lives, do anything but curse anything Trump related. So he has taken a hit in his net worth. If Donald Trump were the greedy, greedy businessman that the left portrays him to be, and the evil man making himself rich off the presidency, he would not be running for re-election because he's losing money. It's that simple. It's kind of funny, all these lawsuits. Donald Trump is, foreign governments have stayed and had parties at the Trump Hotel in Washington, D.C. That's a direct way to pay off. Yeah, I don't really think that $25,000, maybe even upwards of $100,000 for a ballroom and catering, which the catering is likely farmed out, for an event at the Trump Hotel in Washington, D.C., is really going to be enough to buy a billionaire. But if they're really thinking that, you know, you can buy a billionaire for a $5,000 a night suite if you stay there for a week, why couldn't you buy Joe Biden for $50,000 a month to his kid? If you think about the left's arguments, logically, the wheels come off and their pants come down. But they want you to believe. And, of course, everything the Democrats do are for public relations. It really has no bearing on reality. They need to convince voters that something fishy is going on. But ask your friends, ask your liberal friends, could you really buy... I mean, forget a billionaire. Do you think you could buy a politician and their vote for $5,000? Do you really think there's anybody up on Capitol Hill who for $5,000 would risk humiliation, prison time, and expulsion from the government, loss of their pension? Do you really think there are lots of people up there willing to do that? Yet that's what we're expected to believe about Donald Trump, a multi-billionaire, because some people go and have dinner at his hotel in a restaurant he doesn't own. Delicious restaurant, by the way, just wildly expensive. So that was the original uproar at the press conference from Mick Mulvaney. Then he opened it up to broader questions beyond the G7 summit and logistics. Jonathan Carl enters first. I have a lot of audio. The entire exchange is about 7 minutes long. We're going to play it all, but we're not going to play it all at once. I'm going to stop it as necessary, but I want you, and it's important, even though we only have about 25 minutes together before we get to the Greg Jarrett interview, I want you to have the full picture, because the media is not giving you the full picture, shockingly enough. They are cutting out snippets that they can then use to make the case that they want to use. If this were a court of law, these would be lawyers acting unethically. These are journalists, and they no longer have a code of ethics, so there's no problem with what they're doing in their profession. We, the people, have to hold them accountable. The only way really to hold them accountable is to expose them in all their glory. That's why I want to present this unedited. Stopped, it will be stopped, but unedited to give it proper context, because what you're about to hear was portrayed by, as I said, CNN as the White House admitting a quid pro quo when it comes to Ukraine, and the New York Times declared the same thing. Donald Trump, the White House admitted a quid pro quo and then tried to walk it back. CNN's headline, Mulvaney brashly admits quid pro quo over Ukraine aid as key details emerge, then denies doing so. The New York Times headline, Mulvaney says, then denies that Trump held back Ukraine aid as quid pro quo. Now, before we get to the audio, it's important to point out what he's talking about. The quid pro quo that the media wants people to think that they're talking about has to do with investigating Joe Biden. That is not, in unambiguously not, what Mick Mulvaney is talking about. But that is what they want you to think, because that is the crime Democrats are alleging, that Donald Trump was using U.S. aid as a cudgel, as a sword to hang over the head of Ukraine to dig up dirt, as they always say, on Joe Biden. You read the transcript. If you read the transcript or heard my reading of the transcript, nothing of the sort happened, but that hasn't stopped them from reporting it. It was billed as a quid pro quo. Yet the quid pro quo was there in the transcript all along for everybody to see. Ukraine's pretty corrupt. Mr. President, Mr. New President. I want to make sure you're not as corrupt anymore. And in addition to that, I want Europe to kick in more. I want Europe to do more to support you. They're not doing enough. They're closer. It's more important to them. And also, I would like you to cooperate with the Public Justice Department investigation into the Ukrainian involvement in the 2016 election. That is the reality of the transcript. That is the reality of what you're going to hear Mick Mulvaney talk about. That is not the reality of what was reported by the mainstream media, because they don't talk about in their screaming headlines or their lead paragraphs what the quid pro quo was, because they've tainted the words quid pro quo into meaning some kind of corruption, whereas, in fact, pretty much every exchange between human beings is some form of quid pro quo. Talk to your wife or your husband. You give me a foot rub. Well, will you give me a foot rub if I give you a foot rub? Sure. There you go. Quid pro quo. Call the FBI. Get them to raid your house and arrest your spouse. Don't do that. If you're looking for a way out of your marriage, find a better one. But those sorts of things, if this, then that. By the way, another example of a quid pro quo, just to bring it into the political realm, is former Vice President Joe Biden telling the Ukrainian government, we have $1 billion in aid here for you that you're not going to get unless you fire the prosecutor that we don't like, that, just by the way, happens to be investigating the company my son has got a sweetheart deal with. That is a direct quid pro quo. That is the kind of quid pro quo that the Democratic media doesn't have a problem with, because it's a Democrat doing it. Anyway, I've set this up enough. You understand what to expect. So let's get right to the questioning. This is about 22 minutes into Mulvaney's press conference. The first voice you're going to hear is Jonathan Carl of ABC News, and then it will be Mick Mulvaney answering him.
To the question of Ukraine, can you clarify, and I've been trying to get an answer to this, was the president serious when he said that he would also like to see China investigate the Bidens? And you were directly involved in the decision to withhold funding from Ukraine. Can you explain to us now definitively why? Why was funding without?
Sure, let's deal with the second one first. Which is, look, it should come as no surprise to anybody. The last time I was up here, I haven't done this since I was chief of staff, right? Last time I was up here, some of you folks remember, it was for the budget briefings, right? And one of the questions y'all always ask me about the budget is, what are y'all doing to the foreign aid budget? Because we absolutely gutted it, right? President Trump is not a big fan of foreign aid. Never has been, still isn't. Doesn't like spending money overseas, especially when it's poorly spent. And that is exactly what drove this decision. I've been in the office a couple times with him talking about this. He said, look, Mick, this is a corrupt place. Everybody knows it's a corrupt place. By the way, put this in context. This is on the heels of what happened in Puerto Rico, when we took a lot of heat for not wanting to give a bunch of aid to Puerto Rico because we thought that place was corrupt. And by the way, it turns out we were right. All right. So put that as your context. He's like, look, this is a corrupt place. I don't want to send them a bunch of money and have them waste it, have them spend it, have them use it to line their own pockets. Plus, I'm not sure that the other European countries are helping them out either. So we actually looked at that during that time before when we cut the money off before the money actually flowed, because the money flowed by the end of the fiscal year. We actually did an analysis of what other countries were doing in terms of supporting Ukraine. What we found out was that, and I can't remember if it's zero or near zero, dollars from any European countries for lethal aid. You've heard the president say this, that we give them tanks and the other countries give them pillows. That's absolutely right, that as vocal as the Europeans are about supporting Ukraine, they are really, really stingy when it comes to lethal aid. And they weren't helping Ukraine, and that still to this day are not. And the president did not like that. I know it was a long answer to your question, but I'm still going. So those were the driving factors. Did he also mention to me in the past the corruption related to the DNC server? Absolutely. No question about that. But that's it. And that's why we held up the money.
But that's it. And that's why we held up the money. There's Mick Mulvaney's direct answer to the question. Wordy, but direct. But that's not good enough. That's not going to get Jonathan Carl a scalp, let alone a Pulitzer. So he has to circle back for another bite at the apple. But think about what Mick Mulvaney said there, and then think back to the transcript itself. How does that jive with the transcript itself? The first thing that Donald Trump brought up was corruption in Ukraine. He also brought up the meddling by Ukrainian government officials, which was widely reported at the time. I read you a Politico article from November 17th, I think it was, or not November, January 17th, 2017, about how the Ukrainian government has now got to find a way to make nice with the Trump administration after working with the Clinton campaign to try to damage him. So that is the context there. It makes perfect sense that, and frankly, I love it anytime a president, any president says, we're going to make sure that you're going to spend this money right. We're not just going to write you a check because we've always written you a check. We're not just going to give you money because we've always given you money. You're lining your pockets, or the past administrations have lined their pockets, and we're going to make sure that doesn't happen this time. So, yes, damn right, there were strings attached, there were conditions of it, and the aid was held up until the federal government was satisfied that that was not going to be the case. The American people should be quite happy about that aspect of it, but the media does not reflect the American people. So rather than just listen to that answer and say, okay, well, that's the answer, whether you believe it or not, Jonathan Carl wants his scalp, or at least some blood. So he circles back and goes in again.
Now, there was a report.
So the demand for an investigation into the Democrats was part of the reason that to withhold funding to Ukraine.
The look back to what happened in 2016 certainly was part of the thing that he was worried about in corruption with that nation. Then that is absolutely appropriate.
Withholding the funding.
Yeah, which ultimately then flowed.
That's an important aspect of this. Well, a couple of important aspects. It's about looking backwards, not looking forwards and trying to get dirt on his future potential political opponent. It was about what had happened in the 2016 election. Ukraine has a lot of information about what happened during the 2016 campaign. They have a lot of information about that. And we were trying to get it. Our country was trying to get it. This administration was trying to get it. And if you listen to Democrats whine for the last 2 years, they wanted all this information as well. Now, suddenly, they're not interested in getting to the bottom of what happened in the 2016 election. Suddenly, they're not interested at all in that. And then, as Mulvaney said, the money flowed. So if you gave the money anyway, after you were satisfied on the corruption issue, what kind of quid pro quo could there possibly have been when it comes to Joe Biden, which is what Jonathan Carl is ultimately driving at? There can't be any. Launch this investigation or we shall never give you this money. By the way, here's this money. Oh, by the way, Ukraine didn't actually know that the United States government had put a hold on that money until more than a month after the actual call had happened. And then pretty quickly thereafter, the money was released. So if this is somehow a leverage game by the Trump administration to try to get the Ukrainian government to dig up dirt or manufacture dirt on Joe Biden, as the liberal media has portrayed it both ways, it's really, really, really poorly executed, because you can't exert leverage over somebody unless they know you've got something that over them. And Ukraine had no idea. And then you don't let go of that leverage until you get what you want. Yet they did. They released the aid before they got what they wanted. So none of it makes sense if you think about it logically. But the media absolutely 100% does not want you to think about this logically.
By the way, there was a report that we were worried that the money wouldn't, if we didn't pay out the money, it would be illegal. Okay, it would be unlawful. That is one of those things that has that little shred of truth in it that makes it look a lot worse than it really is. We were concerned about over at OMB about an impoundment. And I know I just put half you folks to bed, but there's the Budget Control Act. Budget Control Impoundment Act of 1974 says that if Congress appropriates money, you have to spend it. Okay, at least that's how it's interpreted by some folks. And we knew that money either had to go out the door by the end of September, or we had to have a really, really good reason not to do it. And that was the legality of the issue.
But to be clear, what you just described is a quid pro quo. It is funding will not flow unless the investigation into the Democratic server happened as well.
We do that all the time with foreign policy.
Right there is where the media, that's the clip that the media played. What you're describing is a quid pro quo. We do that all the time with foreign policy. We do that all the time. And they said, aha, they're not giving you the context that it was about corruption and it was about Europe. I mean, if you read the transcript, you knew this. Europe not kicking in enough. And it was about cooperation with an ongoing Department of Justice investigation into what happened in 2016 with Ukraine's involvement in our elections, the meddling that Democrats used to be all against. Now, they apparently don't mind it when it comes from Ukraine because that was designed explicitly, and they admitted it themselves, to help Hillary Clinton. But if you just take that, we do that all the time, you have Mick Mulvaney admitting a quid pro quo. But the quid pro quo that the left has been telling us is so problematic has nothing to do with looking backwards, has nothing to do with cooperating with an out-in-the-open Department of Justice investigation that the whole world knew was going on. We were told that the quid pro quo was about digging up dirt on Joe Biden. Yet it is explicitly not the case. And the media, rather than taking this in the context in which it obviously is made, decided to twist it and leave that fact. They didn't come out and say they've admitted that he's spying on Joe Biden and want to dig up dirt on Joe Biden. They just say he's admitted a quid pro quo, because they have been saying all along that quid pro quo is wrong. Yet every bit of foreign policy and a large chunk of domestic policy happens based upon a quid pro quo, the horse trading for votes in the House and the Senate. The negotiations between the Congress and the White House are all quid pro quos. Nobody comes in and says, you know what, I have no demands. There's nothing I want whatsoever. If you want me to vote for this bill, I'll just do it out of the kindness of my heart. That doesn't happen. We do not live in a cartoon world. So our entire existence is based upon a quid pro quo. If you stop at the store and buy a bottle of Coke today, that is a quid pro quo. You want that bottle of Coke. They want a $1.50 or whatever out of your pocket. You make that trade. One thing for another. You have to be brain damaged or deliberately obtuse or wildly dishonest to take what you just heard and make it into what I told you the media did, what the New York Times write their headline, Mulvaney says, then denies that Trump held back Ukraine aid as quid pro quo. Well, he denied it in the sense he didn't even actually deny it. He just released a statement essentially saying what I'm saying now. You people are morons. I was talking about the 2016 election, amongst other things, nothing to do with Joe Biden and his son. But they don't want to admit that. They call that walking back. Oh, he denied it. He walked back his comments. No, he didn't. He clarified because you people were lying about it. So he put it in dumber terms. He dumbed it down even further. And then that became the story. Well, he's walking it back. He's walking it back. To make my point, this exchange goes on. You're going to hear another reporter. I don't know who she is. Mick Mulvaney didn't know who she was, but she was in the second row. I don't know who she works for. She doesn't identify herself. But there's an incredibly stupid and telling exchange with Mick Mulvaney. Because after what you just heard and what you'll hear Mick Mulvaney explain a little bit more, this woman chimes in and asks a question as if everything you just heard didn't happen. Now, remember, I'm playing you the whole exchange as it happened in order. Nothing has been cut out. The only thing I did was stop it when I wanted to insert my comments. So it's, you hear it in line the way it happened.
We were holding up money at the same time for, what was it? The Northern Triangle countries. We're holding up aid at the Northern Triangle countries so that they would change their policies on immigration. By the way, and this speaks to an important. I'm sorry. This speaks to an important point, because I heard this yesterday, and I can never remember the gentleman who testified. Was it McKinney, the guy? Is that his name? I don't know him. He testified yesterday. And if you go, and if you believe the news reports, okay, because we've not seen any transcripts of this. The only transcript I've seen was Sondland's testimony this morning. If you read the news reports and you believe them, what did McKinney say yesterday? Well, McKinney said yesterday that he was really upset with the political influence in foreign policy. That was one of the reasons he was so upset about this. And I have news for everybody. Get over it. There's going to be political influence in foreign policy. I'm talking to Mr. Carl. That is going to happen. Elections have consequences, and foreign policy is going to change from the Obama administration to the Trump administration. And what you're seeing now, I believe, is a group of mostly career bureaucrats who are saying, you know what, I don't like President Trump's politics, so I'm going to participate in this witch hunt that they're undertaking on the Hill. Elections do have consequences, and they should, and your foreign policy is going to change. Obama did it in one way, we're doing it a different way, and there's no problem with that.
Yes, sir. About the Biden zone, Mr. Mulvaney, did that come into consideration when that
I'm
money
sorry,
was
I don't
up?
Know your name, but he's being very rude, so if you go ahead and answer your question.
Just to clarify and just to follow up on that question, so when you're saying that politics is going to be involved, the question here is not just about a political decisions about how you want to run the government. This is about investigating political opponents.
She brings it right back to Joe Biden. He could not have been more clear. We're asking to cooperate with the Justice Department so we can get a full and complete picture of what happened in 2016. That should be a priority for all Americans, as Democrats continually whine and tell us he doesn't want to know what happened back in 2016. Well, here is the President of the United States saying, hey, work with us. You're getting money from us. In exchange for that money, we want you to be cooperative with an ongoing investigation into how your country messed around in our election. All right? You're a new government. We're going to cut you a big fat check. How about a little help for us? A lawful, legal, legitimate, above board public investigation is ongoing, and we want your help because you have information that we can't get any other way. Because it took place in Ukraine, and we do not have jurisdiction over Ukraine. We can't go over there and subpoena their records. We can't go over there and demand jack crap from them. Perfectly legitimate. And my 2-year-old daughter, who's over there playing with an abacus right now, not well, not accurately, just sliding them back and forth, and is full of snot because she's got a cold, she understands that. Yet somehow, this White House White House Correspondents Association credentialed journalist sitting in the second row can't grasp that or won't grasp that. She went right back. The media are like a pair of spandex. They just snap right back into place. Here are the facts. Here's the answer to your question. I couldn't be more unambiguous. Okay, well, back to the narrative we go. That's exactly what you just heard, and that's exactly what happens in this exchange. Now, maybe this woman is incredibly stupid. I don't know. It's entirely possible. I think there's a better than average chance that everybody in that White House press briefing room is incredibly stupid. But you really have to have recently suffered a massive closed head injury to be as stupid as this woman comes off.
Are you saying
now, the DNC server
that it's okay for the U.S. government to hold up aid and require a foreign government to investigate political opponents of the president?
Now, you're talking about looking forward to the next election.
Even, the DNC is still involved in this next election. Is that not correct?
So wait a second. So there's, hold on a second. No, let me ask you.
Investigate the DNC.
So
right?
Let's look at this.
Is the DNC political?
There's an ongoing.
Are the DNC political opponents of the president? No more so than you are, lady. No more so than you are. She's not going to have it. No. They're political opponents. So, okay, then if the DNC engaged in unlawful activities during the 2016 campaign, and if they did that, is the only way they could ever be investigated criminally or in any other way whatsoever is if Democrats had won? If a Republican does it, you're just investigating your political opponents. So it has to be done by a Democrat. Anybody really believe that? Anybody really have a lot of faith in the Obama administration's investigation into Lois Lerner targeting conservatives for their political beliefs? Anybody really buy that? I mean, aside from Democrats and everybody with a media credential in that room? Yet that's what she's saying there. How dare you try to get to the bottom of whether or not crimes were committed by this meddling? You're asking for dirt on your political opponents, and I mean the DNC. That's not what she meant originally, but she's trying to cover her ass and backpedal because she's being exposed as a partisan hack.
There's an ongoing investigation by our Department of Justice into the 2016 election. I can't remember the person's name. Durham, okay? That's an ongoing investigation, right? So you're saying the President of the United States, the chief law enforcement person, cannot ask somebody to cooperate with an ongoing public investigation into wrongdoing? That's just bizarre to me that you would think that you can't do that.
It's bizarre to everybody except for the viewers of MSNBC and CNN and the nightly newscasts on the networks because they didn't see this part of the exchange. They just heard the, yeah, we do it all the time, quid pro quo. Smoking gun number 573, we finally got him this time, and they don't have him at all. She then circles back and again bastardizes what was being discussed.
And so you would say that it's fine to ask about the DNC, but not about Biden. So Biden is running for the Democratic nomination, right? That's for 2020.
That's a hypothetical because that did not happen here.
But
I would ask you.
No. On the call, the president did ask about investigating the Bidens. Are you saying that the money that was held up, that had nothing to do with Biden?
No, the money held up had absolutely nothing to do with Biden. There's no question. And that was the point I made to you.
And you're drawing a distinction. You're saying that it would be wrong.
Three factors. Again, I was involved with the process by which the money was held up temporarily. Okay, three issues for that: the corruption in the country, whether or not other countries were participating in the support of the Ukraine, and whether or not they were cooperating in an ongoing investigation with our Department of Justice. That's completely legitimate. Yes, sir.
There you have it. Unambiguous, direct to the point, the media missing the point deliberately or because they're stupid, take your pick, and making everything back to the narrative, nonstop narrative. The narrative must be fed. They're like fat bastard. Get in my belly, narrative. Get in my belly. All right. Well, now you know the full context. It went on from there. The whole show could be about that. But that's the gist of it. That's where the Democrats thought, we've got him admitting a quid pro quo. There is no admission of a quid pro quo there because there was no quid pro quo. After the Greg Jarrett interview, I'll tell you how to reiterate how to enter the contest. And then I have a montage from the Media Research Center that is absolutely brilliant that shows you how much groupthink there is between the Democratic Party and the media, even though that's redundant at this time. Before we get to Greg Jarrett, though, a word from our other sponsor. Every day, President Trump is facing unprecedented obstruction and harassment from the liberal mob and their fake news allies, as I just demonstrated. He's been exonerated twice, and they're still calling for his impeachment because they know Congress is their last hope. He needs your support now more than ever. Text the word daily to 88022 and receive official Trump alerts directly to your phone. You'll gain exclusive 2020 updates directly from President Trump himself. Be the first to know when new Trump merchandise is available, and you'll even be able to give your input on key issues to help shape the 2020 campaign. Again, all you have to do is text the word daily, D-A-I-L-Y, to 88022. Let them know where you heard about it from. While Democrats and their fake news media friends have spent the last 2 years focusing on bogus witch hunts, how appropriate considering the guest, President Trump has been working around the clock to make America great again. Make sure you're getting your news directly from the source by texting the word daily to 88022. Again, just the word daily. Just send it one time to 88022 today. This is paid for by the Trump Make America Great Again Committee, a joint fundraising committee authorized by and composed of Donald J. Trump for President Incorporated and the Republican National Committee that is dedicated to making America great again. Without further ado, best-selling author and really nice guy, Greg Jarrett.
Alrighty, hello again, everyone, and welcome to it. It's the Daily Caller Podcast for the 18th day of October 2019. I'm Derek Hunter. I am your host, and as we do every Friday, well, we normally have just one camera on me, and it's a surprise, but there's no surprise since I announced this ahead of time. We're joined by huge number one best-selling author, Greg Jarrett. Welcome back.
Greg. Thank you, Turk.
Last year you were here and we pushed you over the edge. No, not
you
really.
You did.
You had the Russia hoax, often mispronounced as the Russian hoax, which it is not. No N on there. And now you're back with another incredible work, tons of footnotes, tons of research. And you did this quick turnaround time.
Yes.
Witch Hunt, the story of the greatest mass delusion in American political history. And whenever I talk about anything related to Mueller, anything that stems from that and the cast of characters in there, people go wild. The emails come in. The conspiracy theories fly as well.
Sure.
But it's something that people are inherently interested in because it really could be the greatest hoax ever pulled in American politics. So when you sat down and you're basking in the glory of the Russia hoax, before we get into the book, let's get into the process. When you're basking in the glory of, you know, number one bestseller, you're like, wow, how do I top that? What do I do? Most people would want to kick back and relax.
Right.
But I know how long it takes to write a book, especially one 500 pages plus. How much time did you give yourself to enjoy the last one before you started on this one? Because we're a year later and this is out.
You know, my life has been ruined for 2 years, essentially. There was no time to relax and enjoy because I updated the first book, The Russia Hoax, with a paperback version that had all kinds of new information that I'd been able to obtain since the hardback came out. Mm-hmm. So there was that, and then the promotion of that. So I started writing Witch Hunt, the newest book, in February. I wrote 7 hours a day, 7 days a week. I took my birthday off in April.
Slacker.
Yeah. And until I finished it 5 months later. And then there's really 2 months worth of going through editing, updating with new information. And we had to cut 200 pages. So it's 500 pages. It really was 700 pages. There's 1,500 footnotes. So, you know, everything is sourced. No anonymous sources. So the people who I talk to, it's on the record. Tens of thousands of pages of documents I had to go through, testimony, government records, court filings, the whole 10 yards. So, but it is I think it is a thorough accounting of, as I say in the subtitle, the story of the greatest mass delusion in American political history.
When you sat down to write this and go through the documents and everything that had changed since you first finished the Russia hoax and the updates, was there anything you came across that really surprised you?
The level of malevolence, the venal conduct was really pretty stunning. But I'll give you a couple of surprises. It turns out that Rod Rosenstein, who appointed the special counsel Bob Mueller, did so not because the law or the evidence merited it, because he got angry. It was an act of vengeance and retaliation against Donald Trump. And as I explain in the book, when confronted with what he had done, a clear abuse of power, a violation of regulations, he cowers behind his desk and he blubbers, "Am I going to get fired?" Which tells you he knew what he'd done was wrong. So think about this, Derek, a 22-month-long national nightmare that essentially holds a presidency in hostage occurred because one guy got mad. And Mueller knew almost immediately that there was no credible evidence of a criminal collusion conspiracy between Trump and Russia, and admitted it in a meeting with Trump's lawyers a full year before the Mueller report came out. He refused to say so publicly. He refused to file an interim report. And instead, you know, he decides to pursue this quixotic quest of obstruction of justice. And it results in that meeting, March 5th, 2018, in an angry confrontation. John Dowd, one of Trump's lawyers, is standing up, pounding his fist on the table and yelling at Mueller, you know, "Go ahead, you don't have a leg to stand on." It was truly a tense and ugly moment. And the book is filled with stories like this.
So you're saying essentially that Mueller knew right away, and the only thing he got anybody on was obstructing an investigation that he knew
didn't need to happen, that it was
right.
over.
Right, exactly. Think about that. You know, there are two chapters in this book in which I go through in detail the unconscionable, unprincipled machinations of Mueller and his team of special prosecutors, team of partisans, really. Witness intimidation, trying to get witnesses to lie about Donald Trump, threatening those witnesses with prosecution. You know, this is, if you and I did it, it would be suborning perjury. Mm-hmm. But when the government does it, the almighty government with unlimited resources and immense power, it's okay. In my book, it's not okay.
It's not okay at all. Let's go through the cast of characters a little bit here. One of the names that gets mentioned to me the most in emails, that gets mentioned in the liberal media the least, is Mifsud.
Right.
Talk a little bit about him, because whenever he's referenced, he's a diplomat or he's an academic. It's glossed over when you hear him mentioned casually on, right. say, MSNBC. But there's a lot more behind this guy than anybody wants people to know.
Yeah, if you read the Mueller report, which is wrong about Mifsud, they claim, oh, he has ties to Russian intelligence. No, he doesn't. He has allegiance to Western intelligence. In fact, he teaches at what is popularly known as Spook U in Italy, in which FBI agents and other intelligence agents receive instructions. And he's key because he has this fateful breakfast with, you know, this junior unpaid advisor, George Papadopoulos, and tells Papadopoulos allegedly, oh, the Russians have damaging information, emails about Hillary Clinton and so forth. And, you know, that allegedly triggers the witch hunt, mm-hmm. the investigation of Trump-Russia collusion. It really didn't. That was just a cover of the FBI fed to the
media. How does Papadopoulos, an unpaid junior guy who spent a couple of minutes on the Trump campaign, end up having a meal with somebody like Mifsud?
He was set up. He was a patsy. It's altogether possible that Western intelligence, including U.S. intelligence agencies, used Mifsud to feed false information to Papadopoulos to justify an investigation of Donald Trump.
How did that investigation begin, and how was it conducted? The CIA, the federal government, can't spy on American citizens.
Exactly.
But MI6 can.
Right.
And then they can share that. There's this spying right. by proxy, which I don't think people fully understand.
It's outsourcing.
The Western intelligence do that all the time
right.
to sort of get around domestic laws.
Yeah, I mean, people like Clapper and Brennan, you know, heads of the intelligence agency CIA, DNI at the time in the Obama administration, are prohibited from spying, as you point out, and I do in my book, on Americans. But they can outsource it. They can outsource it to Italy, Great Britain, Australia, other countries. And
how
that's what they did.
Is that? There's an Australian in Australia that the Australian government would like to know information on, but
right.
they can't do it themselves. So maybe they pick up the phone, they call a John Brennan and say, hey, would you mind sniffing
yeah.
around this guy? It's perfectly legal for you to do it. And then if you find anything or whatever you find, let us know. And it's like a free trade agreement
oh, yeah.
behind
well,
the scenes.
We don't know how often it happens. I suspect it happens so often that it really should be frightening. To show you how insidious and devious all of this was, is that, we then used undercover informants abroad, notably Stefan Halper, who is a, you know, British professor, but he's really a CIA asset, has long ties to the CIA. So to insinuate himself into the Trump campaign, to gain incriminating information, which didn't exist, so he didn't get it. Instead, what he got was exculpatory information that proved there was no Trump-Russia collusion conspiracy. So they hid it. They hid it from the American public. And they continue to drive this hoax. It was mostly propelled by what Hillary Clinton's campaign and the DNC had paid for, which was Russian disinformation in a dossier prepared by an ex-British spy, Christopher Steele, then sedulously disseminated to the media to stop Trump from getting elected. And it was the basis of, it wasn't Papadopoulos bar talk, that's nonsense. That was an FBI cover story. No, it was the dossier. And the FBI knew the dossier was phony. They'd been warned that Christopher Steele was not to be trusted. In fact, they fired him. And yet Comey and McCabe and Sally Yates went in front of a FISA court and said he was credible, even though they'd fired him. And they didn't tell the court that. And they're, as I explain in the book, six different lies they peddled to these judges. They deceived him. They concealed evidence. That's a fraud on the court and five other felonies.
You're a lawyer, and the FISA court is supposed to be, you know, beyond reproach. It's supposed to be above reproach. It's supposed to be this, you know, right. Very, very concerned because you're violating Americans' civil liberties if you get a FISA warrant against you. That's what's happening. The government is spying on you, and it's giving right. permission. So there's a high bar. Those judges could, on their own, say, hey, now that all this stuff is public, hey, right. wait a second. We got a problem with what you sent us. There's got to be some possibility of contempt. They don't right. seem to care, the judges themselves.
Well, here's the problem. We don't know because it's a secret court. Everything they do is secret. So if they want to hold somebody in contempt, that would be secret. Remember, the FISA court is just one judge rotating in from the federal bench every week, and there are 12 total. Selected by Chief Justice John Roberts of the U.S. Supreme Court. They receive, and I went through the documents and did the calculations, they receive 29 FISA applications to spy every week. Now, a single judge can't hold 29 hearings, so those judges invariably simply take it on paper submission, and they have to trust mm-hmm. that what Comey and McCabe and Yates are telling them is honest and truthful. Well, in this case, it wasn't. But the judges have no way of knowing it because it's not an adversarial proceeding. There's only one side, the government side.
Right.
And the government has been caught before. The FISA court back in 2001 hauled then Bob Mueller, FBI director, in front of them and said, we have evidence you guys have been lying, dozens and dozens and dozens of cases, and you've been lying to us. And Mueller said, you're right. I'm going to fix it with new rules and regulations. And then they went on to continue their practice.
The old rules have failed. All we need is more rules.
Right,
more
right. And more but they more ignore rules. These rules with impunity, Derek.
Well, when you set the rules, you always, you know, yeah. when you set the unit of measure, you're always going to be the smartest. You're always going to be the funniest. You're right. always going to be the best looking if you get to decide what constitute those things.
Right.
Are there any heroes in this? Was there anybody in the inner circle who was watching this go on and say, even expressing some unease with it? Or were they all just rubber stamping it as they went along because of I assume what they looked at as certainty that Donald Trump wasn't going to win.
Right.
So if you know that the guy you're doing this to is never going to sit in the Oval Office, he's going to have no power whatsoever mm-hmm. to investigate this, and he's likely never going to know that it happened. Mm-hmm. So was there anybody who kind of said, this makes me uncomfortable from a conceptual standpoint?
Only belatedly, when it was too late, and under oath being questioned, for example, several top officials at the FBI confessed, we never had any credible evidence to launch the investigation. In the case of Hillary Clinton and her emails, they confessed that they were being pressured and told by the Department of Justice under Loretta Lynch in the Obama administration, you're not going to charge Hillary Clinton. So, you know, there are mostly villains in this sordid tale. But Bill Barr, the new attorney general, is, as I write in my book, the new hero because he figured out what was going on. You know, the explanations he was getting didn't match the documents. And that's why he has launched a criminal investigation headed up by U.S. Attorney John Durham. To get to the bottom of it, to hold people accountable. And I think in the end, that will happen.
But people in those positions are rarely, if ever, held accountable. What are the odds? Yes,
slim. But you know, back in the Watergate days, a lot of top officials, including you know John Mitchell, the Attorney General, and Maurice Stans, the cabinet officer. I think he was Commerce Secretary. They went to prison, as did dozens of others. So it can happen. It should happen. We'll just have to wait and see. I end the book by saying a reckoning awaits. Because the only cure for the truth, for a lie, is the truth. And the only remedy for lawlessness is justice. And there has to be a reckoning with justice.
How do you get justice, though, when you have half of Congress disinterested in plain language? Disinterested in obvious provable facts. I mean, we have Schiff up there on Capitol Hill badgering Volcker the other day because he won't say there was a quid pro quo. He said they didn't. You can't have leverage over somebody unless they know that you're holding something back over the, or over their heads. And the Ukrainians didn't know for a month until after the phone call. And he's undeterred. So when you're dealing with people who it doesn't matter. The truth doesn't matter. They're willing to plow forward. How do you exist in that situation? How does justice exist when, if there's a trial, it would likely be in Washington, D.C., and you're going to pull from a jury pool that is likely going to be partisan since it's 92% Democrat here?
I mean, it's a problem.
Are conservatives, are Americans who are disgusted by all of the things that you've exposed in both of your books, Russia hoax and witch hunt, are they just going to have to be content if there are charges? Is that really sort of the best people can hope for is charges and sullied reputations?
Well, so many people's reputations have already been sullied.
Yeah, but it's people who didn't do anything. General Flynn, for example.
Well, I'm talking about Comey. I mean, anybody who's paying attention. Careful attention realizes that, you know, Comey, who already had a criminal referral against him by the inspector general, is a, you know, inherently corrupt person who repeatedly lied to the president of the United States. He stole government documents, leaked them to the media after telling the president, I would never do sneaky things like leaking. I mean, so, you know, Andrew McCabe has a criminal referral against him for lying not once but four
but again,
times.
It's not going anywhere.
Yeah,
I know. It's weird because Bill Barr seems to be, like you said, charging down and trying to get to the bottom of this. He's also head of the Justice Department. He doesn't seem to have picked up the phone and said, hey, why don't you act on this?
But here's the thing. You know, inventing the lie was easy. Spreading it was easier. Uncovering the truth is hard because the truth has enemies. And cover-ups delay justice because it you know, you got to dig and you have to spend time. And the wheels of justice turn very slowly in that regard. So, you know, I don't want to get out over my skis here and say there will be indictments. There should be indictments. But I'm a patient man. I'm willing to wait because I have confidence in the Attorney General and his U.S. Attorney John Durham.
I'm going to ask you some listener questions here.
Sure.
This first one's from Nathan. Can you please ask Greg Jarrett if he thinks people will actually be held accountable for FISA abuse and other various crimes in 2016, 2017, or should we start stockpiling torches and pitchforks? I just wanted to bring this up because I knew that was relevant to where we are now.
No, it's a fair question.
It's something that people really want to know. They know somebody did something wrong, and they know if they did it, the full weight of the government would be down on them.
Well, FISA abuse, as we often refer to it in this particular case, is probably the strongest evidence of corrupt acts and crimes. And so when the Inspector General report comes out imminently, I understand it's voluminous. I suspect it is a damning indictment of the lawlessness that I describe in Witch Hunt. And I think there will be criminal referrals resulting from that by Michael Horowitz, the IG. Then it is up to people like Durham and Barr to decide whether to present the evidence to a grand jury for felony indictments.
President Trump said, I believe it was Wednesday in passing, maybe it was Tuesday, about the investigation, that it might reach as high as President Obama. Did you, in your research, find any reason to believe that President Obama was aware of what his intelligence community was up to?
Well, this was a criminal investigation of Trump disguised as a counterintelligence probe. Counterintelligence probes must be known and likely approved by the president because the fruits of a counterintelligence probe, the evidence, is for the benefit of the president of the United States. So it would have been, Obama would have received regular debriefings. And we know that because there's a text message I identify in the book from Peter Strzok to Lisa Page saying the White House wants to know everything we are doing. Does that mean, you know, some flunky in the White? No, it means in the Oval Office. It means president of the United States, because the counter-intel probe is for his benefit.
Now, the question would be, did he want to know because he wanted to keep up with it, or did he want to know because it was making him uneasy?
Well, we don't know. But there's enough there to ask the former president of the United States to answer questions under oath before Congress. I would like to see Lindsey Graham, the judiciary chairman of the Senate, to hold hearings about this. He's waiting for the inspector general
that
report.
That brings us to our second question from Andy. I'd really like to hear Greg's view on why Lindsey Graham hasn't held a single Spygate hearing. By not doing so, he ceded the narrative to Shifty, Nadler, et cetera. It says it really pisses him off. It pisses off a lot of people.
He's waiting for the inspector general report.
But how long? I mean, this is not new. The Senate, which is controlled by Republicans, has been playing cat and mouse and saying we're doing something or we're looking into this without seemingly doing anything. Meanwhile, the right. Democrats are having hearings on every meeting that the Trump administration ever has.
If I were in Lindsey Graham's shoes, I would have started an investigation and holding hearings months ago. Initially, he was waiting for the Mueller report. And almost simultaneous with that report, the Attorney General initiated an investigation. So I think, you know, he kept thinking with the Inspector General's report, it was supposed to be out in May, then it was July, then it was August. Now it's, you know, now it's now.
Is that indicative of anything, that the fact that we were told it was done or nearly done and then
it's
going on?
Yeah, it tells you that Christopher Wray, the FBI director, and others in the intelligence community are fighting to cover it up. There is a declassification process going on today, still. It should have been concluded a month ago. But it shows you how vigorously the FBI and the intelligence agencies are fighting to keep this information concealed from the American public.
The White House will get a full edition of it, unredacted, though, right? And the president has the ability to declassify everything.
Yes, and he's actually delegated the authority to the Attorney General, Bill Barr. So Barr has the ultimate authority now. It's in his hands. And I think he is, you know, patiently listening to the arguments of people like Wray and other intelligence community officials. But in the end, you know, Barr's the kind of guy who errs on the side of transparency. And I think most of the report will be made public.
Doing journalism that goes against the established narrative is a lonely place sometimes.
And I'm a lonely guy.
That brings us to our next question from Kim. How is Greg treated by his Democrat peers and D.C. insiders? Are you, you know, you had a number one New York Times bestseller. You've got this other one that's going to be a huge New York Times bestseller. People are interested in this. There's a hunger beyond just the Fox News audience.
Right.
When you have a book coming out, you avail yourself to every media outlet to talk about it. Are you getting invited on The View? Are you getting invited anywhere that, you know, everybody else that has a book come out gets put on?
Well, there have been two reactions. When the first book came out, I was roundly mocked, ridiculed, and demeaned, called a conspiracy theorist, a liar. And then it turned out that everything in that first book was absolutely 100% true and accurate. The other approach that people have taken is to simply ignore it. Mm-hmm. So, for example, my first book was number one New York Times bestseller.
Did the it was New York, on the list for a long
yeah,
time.
Yeah, for a long time. Did the New York Times review the book? No, of course not. you know, it's sort of like we'll ignore it and hope it goes away.
Right.
And it's so I expect the same treatment for this, the second book. But, you know, I'm always called all kinds of unsavory names. And then when what I write is proven true, those people don't apologize.
Or give credit, I imagine.
Never give credit. No, of course not.
I'm sure they're under orders.
And so, yeah, I'm a lonely guy because, you know, the vast majority of the mainstream media is driven by two things, hatred and bias.
There has to be a certain sense of satisfaction to do it against them, though, to have succeeded in spite of their best efforts.
You know, George Orwell, and I mentioned this in the book, said he writes to expose a lie. And I felt the same way, this compulsion to expose the lie and tell the truth. You know, and there's an entire chapter devoted to the media. Chapter 6 is called The Media Witch Hunt. On an almost daily basis, media malpractice, grossly reckless reporting, assuming that the leaks they were getting from the intelligence community were truthful and accurate, so they just didn't bother to try to corroborate them. They reported them. Mm. You know, they spent all of their time ignoring what Hillary Clinton did and devoting their attention and scrutiny to what Trump didn't do. They were blinded by their own enmity and their hatred of Trump, and it's still going on today.
If you pay off the doorman at Studio 54, you're always going to get into the club. Michelle wants to know, do you expect more impact from Horowitz's report or Durham's?
Durham's. In the near term, Horowitz, obviously, it comes out first. But the real meat and potatoes is going to be Durham. And, you know, he has expanded his probe recently. Added new personnel. You don't do that unless you've already got evidence of wrongdoing.
And Democrats are very, very nervous about
that. Oh, totally
nervous. They're trying to undercut everything. I think a lot of this impeachment ramp-up is in anticipation of even just the Horowitz report.
It is. Well, you know, they've been trying to impeach Trump since before he was he was sworn in. The day he was sworn in, the Washington Post published a story that the impeachment of Donald Trump is underway. He hadn't yet moved into the White House. He was still in the motorcade when they published it. I mean, so it's been going on from the very beginning. I've had several conversations with the president, including just a couple of days ago. And, you know, and I quote in the book, you know, how do you hold up under all of this? Because I've never seen him get down about it. And he said, it's a funny quote. He said, you know, most guys would be crawled in the corner sucking their thumb.
Yes.
He said, but I found it to be a challenge. He's a fighter.
Does he thrive on it?
Yeah, I suppose in a way. You know, it's a unique person to be able to handle the immense responsibilities of the presidency, and especially unlike any other previous president, to be under siege day after day, hour after hour, by not just the adversarial party, the Democrats, but the media. Constant criticism and haranguing of the president. It's almost inhuman to be able to you know, sustain all of that and endure it, but he does.
And still laugh.
Yeah,
still have a sense of humor.
Every time I talk to him, you know, I mean, he's up. He's not down. You know, he has a sense of humor. He tells stories and, you know, it's amazing.
Chris, who is a listener in Croatia, says, in regards to the Clinton email debacle, since the DOJ and FBI pretty much screwed the pooch on charging Clinton and her cohorts for this by giving immunity, is it conceivable that they, the FBI or the DOJ, actually committed the crime of obstruction of justice?
Oh, yes. And I argue that in my book. You know, a cop can obstruct his own case, which is obstruction of justice. You know, if a cop arrests somebody, but then, you know, puts the criminal complaint in the bottom drawer, that's obstruction of justice of his own case. So, yeah, the FBI can Cannon has done this, I think, and I lay it out in my book.
Where do we go from here? I mean, we had the Mueller. The Democrats were saying we need the Mueller report. Mueller report will be the Bible. Mueller report will go wherever it takes us. And then they didn't like where it took them. And they said, well, but never mind. We'll go someplace else. There seems to be no end. When you're not bound by reality, there's no time constraints. Are we really looking at, I mean, you turn on some of the cable networks, not named Fox, and they're still harping on this same thing, and they're ignoring half of the evidence in here. They're cherry-picking out the things. They won't mention Ms. Suit, for example, or the origins of this. They have absolutely no interest in this. Are we really in a race between Durham's report and the House acting on impeachment? Is that really where we are? Which one is going to be ready for the public first?
Yeah, I suppose in a way. You know, this whole Ukraine impeachment hysteria is simply, you know, an extension of the witch hunt. Mm. It's just a different version. Instead of Russia collusion, you know, it's Ukrainian.
But Ukraine was actually involved in trying to interfere with the 2016 election. You write about that. You cover this. Explain that a little bit, because that's what Donald Trump was asking the Ukrainian president to investigate. If there was a quid pro quo, it was aid in a criminal investigation in the United States, or there are going to be consequences.
Yeah, as I explain in the book, the Democratic National Committee had on a retainer a subcontractor who's Ukrainian-American by the name of Alexandra Chalupa. So she was soliciting and obtaining Ukrainian disinformation about Donald Trump during the election to help Hillary Clinton. So talk about foreign meddling and collusion.
That was a story. Politico reported on it November or January 17th, three days before President Trump came into office. And that has sort of been memory hole.
Of course. And it's documented. It's true. So, you know, when the president of the United States asks a foreign leader, the president of Ukraine, if you, please aid us in our current ongoing criminal investigation. And the president made that request at the behest and request of William Barr. And B, if you know of any evidence relating to criminal or corrupt conduct, potential conduct by then Vice President Joe Biden, let us know.
Yeah. Kind of
that's not unreasonable. It's perfectly sensible.
They're more upset about the asking rather than they are of the potential corruption and abuse of power.
Well, look, it's a crime to use your public office to confer a benefit to a foreign government, Ukraine, in exchange for something of personal value to yourself or your son, protecting your son. And you've got Joe Biden, you know, bragging about his quid pro quo on camera, for God's sakes. Talk about stupidity and hubris.
Well, it's Joe Biden.
So
he'd be nothing but hair plugs without those two things.
The media overlooks the fact that the criminal division of the Department of Justice examined the official record of that conversation with the Ukraine's president and unanimously determined that there's no crime here. There's no campaign finance violation. This is diplomatic activity. It's not even intelligence activity, which means the whistleblower is not a whistleblower at all. But the media will never tell you that. They'll never focus on that. And Democrats realize that there's no crime here, no high crime and misdemeanor. So they've pivoted to this wonderfully amorphous phrase called abuse of power, which is not in the Constitution. It has no fixed meaning. And it's exactly what the framers feared.
But it's tainting. And that's what they want. It's tainting in the minds of the American public. Because the Republicans are so feckless.
Yes.
They're afraid to go out there and stick to it. The book, Witch Hunt, The Story of the Greatest Mass Delusion in American Political History. I know you have a heart out. As you walk out, as you leave, I'm going to ask you to sign these books. And you can enter to win one if you email Derek at dailycaller.com. And if you've already purchased a copy and you email a picture of that copy so it's not in a bookstore, or a screen capture of your receipt, you'll be entered twice. So there you go. When people close this book, when they're done with this substantial book here, what do you want them to go to sleep thinking? Good thoughts, bad thoughts?
Worried? I want them to be outraged and frightened that their government could commit such heinous acts. And to wake up and realize that we have to do something to fix it. Because as Trump said to me, I interviewed him for the book, he said, this should never, ever happen again to another president. And he's 100% correct.
Greg Jarrett, Fox News Channel, Witch Hunt, the story of the greatest mass delusion in political history. Available now. Selling. Thanks for coming in.
Listen,
appreciate your time.
I always enjoy talking to you because you know a lot about the subject matter and you bring insight and intelligence to it. And thank you for that.
That's going to be my ringtone. Thanks, everybody, for watching, listening. Click subscribe, share, spread the word. Have a great weekend. We'll see you back here on Monday.
And that is the end of the video interview. You don't need to watch the video interview. You just heard the audio of the interview. Greg Jarrett, really nice guy. And if you want to win a signed copy of Witch Hunt, email me, Derek, D-E-R-E-K, at dailycaller.com. Let me know, preferably in the subject line, that you want to be entered, and you shall be entered. I have been getting so many entries of late that I can't respond to all of them. I usually, if you just send an email says, hey, enter me, and I enter you, I usually always responded with, you're entered, good luck, or something like that. There have just been hundreds and hundreds of emails, so I just go through and I copy and paste. You're entered. I guarantee you're entered. If you ask this question or something and you have some comments or something nice to say in there, I will probably try to respond. But I promise you will be entered if you don't hear back from me either way. It's just that I was spending like an hour a day responding to emails with, you're entered, good luck. And it just got to be too much. So if you've ever entered or you ever enter, you are entered. You're in. Those emails come directly to me. There's nobody else working on the show. I get them. I see them. I put you in the list. I put you in the hat. So you've got a shot. So just know that. I want to play this clip. So I know the show's very long today, but I don't care. It's Friday. The Media Research Center, they do the Lord's work over there. They watch all of this stuff constantly and monitor and have an archive going back to the 80s. If you haven't listened to my interview with Brent Bozell from a few months ago, go back and find it on the Daily Caller website. It's there. It's brilliant. The Media Research Center really does do amazing work. They put together a little montage. It's just over a minute long of Democrats saying something, and then journalists saying something. It goes one to the other, back and forth throughout this whole video. A lot of the voices you'll recognize on both sides of the aisle, and you will be hard-pressed that aside from the different voices saying the words, you'd be hard-pressed to know which one was a Democrat saying something and which one was a journalist saying something. All about the president, all about this garbage that we're talking about. It is amazing the way that they work hand in glove or hand up rear puppeting each other. It is groupthink to in its finest. So here, without any further ado, mostly because we got to end the show, we'll do this and then I'll be back to wrap it up.
The actions of the Trump presidency revealed dishonorable fact of the president's betrayal of his oath of office.
The president has been exposed violating his oath of office.
The president of the United States has betrayed his oath of office.
Violations of his oath to the Constitution.
Unprecedented breach of the oath of office.
Betrayals of his oath of office.
The president has admitted enough. We have got enough information at this point.
He has already confirmed what he's done in broad daylight.
We've basically got a confession.
He's already confessed to this crime.
The president has already admitted.
The president admits he did it.
The White House and the State Department continue to orchestrate this massive cover-up.
We are watching a cover-up by the president of the United States.
They've been in the business of trying to cover up.
Implicated in a cover-up.
There's a cover-up.
The cover-up, the attempted cover-up.
To interfere with the Congress's ability to call before it relevant witnesses will be considered as evidence of obstruction.
Trump's strategy, it's pretty clear. Obstruct, deflect, confuse.
Obstructing justice, refusing to comply with the congressional inquiry.
It is obstruction of justice. It's bribery.
A lot of the committees have documented obstruction of justice.
All of this obstruction from the White House and from the president specifically.
He's using the abuse of power and every element of the presidency.
The heart of the abuse of power.
This gross abuse of power.
You could say it was an abuse of power.
There has been an abuse of power.
More signs of abuse of power.
A very devastating picture of
obviously impeachable abuse of power.
That's more than a coincidence, ladies and gentlemen. They used to send out talking points. back in the days of fax machines, and the Democrats and the media would immediately adopt them without question. They don't even have to do that anymore. They are all on the same page. They are all on the same team. You don't have to give orders to a hive mind. They just know. All right, you can email me, Derek at dailycaller.com. Compliments, complaints, whatever you got. The Patreon site, if you want to help out, and a lot of you guys have done it, and I appreciate the hell out of it, is patreon.com/Derek Hunter Podcast to help upgrade the equipment so I'm not having to hold a microphone and clang my ring against it and all that stuff. Have a great weekend. Enter to win the Greg Jarrett book if you wish. You'll have until next Thursday to do that. And keep spreading the word. And more importantly than anything, have a great weekend. I'll see you on Monday.
I always enjoy talking to you because you know a lot about the subject matter, and you bring insight and intelligence to it, and thank you for that.
That's going to be my ringtone.